What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Hey guys, Bill Spadia here. Welcome back to the Recovery Podcast. We're joined by our friends at Recovery Centers of America every month, talking about helping you, your family, your friends recover and defeat addiction. Joining me today, Nick Anastasi. He is a 12-step recovery instructor with Recovery Centers of America. Nick, great to see you. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks so much for having me, Bill, and a privilege and honor to be on the podcast.
So let's jump right into it, Nick. First of all, this 12-step process, people have heard about this before. When we talk about the recovery process, is this something that is an ongoing life journey, or is this something where from a perspective of an alcoholic that you can beat this and have a normal life without these demons in your life?
I would really probably say that it's both, right? It's absolutely an ongoing process, but you know, the magic of it and the experience of it so many have had is if a spiritual life or a new way of living and kind of an inside connection is active in a person's life, they can beat this and they can really, you know, experience and build a lifelong recovery. You know, and so much of it is just getting a person inside and engaging in new actions and a new approach to life. And we really get to start the process of that here while they're in treatment.
At what point do you get people who are battling with alcohol addiction? I know, just speaking to folks in this business, I've been working on the charity angle of this, raising money and working with different recovery groups and sober living groups across the state for many years now. And you know, everyone is different. Every battle seems to be different. But what I've learned is alcoholism in particular can actually be more physically deadly than some of the drug dependencies and drug addiction, at least the sober process. So at what point do you get people into the 12-step program that you instruct?
So I would say that typically, you know, and here at RCA, detox lengths vary. You know, some people will stay on, you know, in a more detox protocol for different lengths than some other folks. But in some cases, there are individuals that I get to have in groups and speaking with one-on-one within a day or two, surprisingly enough. In some cases, after about a week to 10 days of heavy sleep and taking it easy in a comfy bed, we really get to start trying to teach them and see where they are. So it really varies, but I would say generally speaking, somewhere within the first 5 to 7 days.
So let me ask you, you know, 5 to 7 days, and again, it varies. Where are people mentally typically when they get to you? Are they fighting back, I don't want this? Or do you typically get someone who said, okay, hands up, I gotta change my life and sober up?
So it's interesting to kind of speak on my experience with that a little bit, because typically at that first week mark, what I notice is people are pretty beat up. you know, probably in some physical or emotional pain, kind of still coming to, you know, mentally and physically, but that, you know, they'll kind of listen and really are glad to be in a treatment environment in a lot of cases. You know, they're sort of beat down for the time being. So I would say that the general receiving of the message is pretty positive. I think that speaks to the culture and staff and just resources of a facility. But, you know, you would think that a lot of people would be like kind of fighting you that early in their recovery. But strangely enough, I strangely believe just to be safe and in a place where they can get some help.
Do you get people that, and how do you deal with it? How do you deal with the adversity of someone who they feel like they were forced into it? There was an intervention. Maybe it's a spouse or a sibling, or even in some cases, children, adult children. How do you deal with somebody who feels they were forced into the recovery program, or at the point where they get to you, have those battles already been fought and won?
I think what we collectively try to do, I mean, I know what I individually try to do is really number one, show them compassion and you know, kind of a listening ear and some empathy or sympathy, depending on your personal experience, right? You know, and just normalize the struggles of early recovery. I mean, you know, early recovery is such a just mind and emotion and physical state of overall feeling overwhelmed. And so I think the approach that we take is listen and try to show a little love and compassion and just let them know that like it's okay and we're here with them. And I think typically that compassion and that welcoming really goes further than anything sometimes that we can teach them when they're resistant.
So from a personal perspective, what was your journey like? How did you get into this?
Well, after a couple unsuccessful attempts at recovery, you know, for various reasons, didn't understand it, didn't want it. You know, thought I could be that one guy that does it successfully, right? After a couple unsuccessful treatment attempts, I finally landed in a treatment center. And it's hard to really pinpoint, but I heard the message. You know, I finally felt pretty welcomed and kind of heard and something started to happen internally, and I could probably hit on that in a little more detail if you want, but yeah, I got really lucky in that as soon as I got out of inpatient treatment, I immediately went to jail for a probation violation.
Wow.
So I go from, you know, a head full of inpatient treatment and support and all this good stuff, right? All these 12-step speakers to lock up for 2 months.
Wow. What was that like?
Well, for me, I think it was the best possible situation I could have had. Because
why do you say that?
Because it forced me to not get right back into my life right away. It forced me to sit with who I was, where I was, and what recovery was asking me to do.
What was the environment like, though, in a jail setting? Were you in a lockup with a general population of criminals? Were you like, was it a harsh environment? Was it low key? And was there a time where you were fearful, and did that fear help you say, okay, I never need to be here again?
So to really give you a crazy, but just totally accurate view of it, I felt safe the whole time. I don't know if it was my perspective or what was really going on the unit around me, but it was basically me and a bunch of other middle-aged guys. For some reason, why I don't really know. We played cards together. We ate together. We watched TV together. At no time did I fear for my safety. And strangely enough, it kind of helped me to feel the fellowship around me, just like treatment did. So I got to tell you, as crazy as this may sound, I had a pretty favorable jail experience.
I have to say, Nick, I don't know that I've ever heard that perspective, ever. But, you know, I'm glad you said it and shared it, because I think it speaks to the positive interaction and the camaraderie that can be just as powerful as the whole concept of scared straight. You know, to scare people into something is one thing. To coax them and build them and coach them and work with them and build them up instead of tear them down. My guess is if you are drug or alcohol dependent, you've already done a good share of tearing yourself down day in and day out.
1,000%, mentally, physically, emotionally, spiritually. So many ways we could look at it, but from physically sick to mentally kind of dependent or obsessed, if you want to look at it that way.
And as a coach and with the 12 steps, and again, just let's speak to the folks that have never heard of this. They don't know, or they know what they've seen on social media. They don't know from the experts, which is why I wanted to have this conversation with you. Are there varying types of addicts and addiction demons? For example, someone who comes to you has a terrible alcohol problem. It is caused tremendous dysfunction. Maybe they've lost a job over it. Maybe they have a tumultuous marriage over it. Do you find there are people that go back and they can gain control of that and have a glass of wine at dinner? Or is it an all or nothing commitment?
I think that if I were to speak on my experience, right, I think that almost across the board, it is they need help and support and change to reintegrate back into their life as a sober individual. Now, are there some exceptions, perhaps, where a few individuals have been able to just kind of stop and get on with it and go back into their families and their lives? I have honestly seen that once or twice, but it's definitely the exception much more than the rule. Typically, what I find folks need is they need structure, they need accountability, and most importantly, they need fellowship and support from like-minded people.
So how do you deal with someone who integrates back into a family structure? Let's say someone's married, and maybe they have kids, and there is part of it, there are some people that can recover, but only if they are completely out of any temptation, or are they able to handle, I'm just thinking of a holiday dinner with family, one person's a recovering alcoholic, everybody else has not had this same addiction fight, or they don't know it, or they're not dealing with it. Do you find that, is it more the rule or the exception that someone can integrate back in and enjoy an interactive event with people who are not sober?
I would say that it's probably the exception a lot more than the rule. My experience, you know, personally in my own recovery and getting to work with different folks is that it's typically going to make someone who suffers with addiction or alcoholism uncomfortable. There are many reasons for that, but one of the main ones that I think you'll see is they wish they were normal like that, quote unquote normal, right? Mm-hmm. It's hard to sit around a group of people who are doing the thing that most alcoholics wish they could do and not seeming to have any problem with it, and to make peace with the fact that they can do the only thing you wish you could do. So I think that is one of the main reasons that you can be so uncomfortable and you can feel so disconnected, so not a part of.
So is this part of the recovery process, working with family and friends? I mean, I think with a friend group, I'm going to guess, just an educated guess from my own experience of working with sober living groups, that the friend group tends to get completely dropped because typically they are the enablers of whatever addiction is there. Harder, of course, to do that with family members, especially if your first move out of recovery is moving back home. So do you coach the family on how to deal with that?
So most certainly, here at an inpatient level. So our therapists work hard on that, you know, as they reach out to family and have family contact and family sessions, you know, and I think that is ideally one of the best ways it can work, right? And just to throw this out there for anybody that might ever wonder why history seemed to state that programs like Alcoholics Anonymous had such high success in its early years. Well, one of the reasons to kind of hit on this point is the family was very involved. Mm-hmm. The family was being talked to and supported and kind of walked with. And I think it's such a crucial part of an individual stabilizing in their recovery program, because, you know, family is where, you know, a lot of love and support and things, positive things exist, but also where a lot of shame and guilt and self-judgment and just, I don't measure up exist. So the more we can do to help and support families understand, I believe an individual's chances of success go way up.
Nick, how many years sober for you?
Just over 8 now.
8 years. Wow. That is fantastic. What a journey. Is it easier every month that goes by, or at this point for you, is it just as hard as it was in year one?
Oh, it's interesting. It goes up and down. I've had seasons of my recovery, if you will. I've had times where I've felt like I'm the most blessed and you know, just fortunate person in the world. And I've had times where it's been a grind. And the crazy part is that some of the more recent grinds have been over the last year or two. And I find that that's what's interesting about the journey. And that's why we don't stop doing it, because you never know when life is going to throw something out there where internally the problems are going to resurface.
With recovery centers, is there a lifeline years later? Is there always a contact back to a coach or an instructor like yourself, or a sponsor, that kind of thing?
So from an RCA treatment standpoint, we utilize an app called Shoutout, which gives individuals access to.
Of course, there's an app for that.
There's an app for that, right? It's funny.
Wow.
Yeah, but from basically just like a more one-on-one reach out to us kind of standpoint, you know, myself and other staff members and therapists do provide contact information to patients to reach out and let us know how they're doing. And that really means a lot.
So the first step is to call 1-800-RECOVERY or go to recoverycentersofamerica.org. And at what point would you say someone would get to you? Would that be right after their detox?
Yes. So once they come in here, once they're admitted and they're safe and they're in our care, I have groups with detox units within days. I mean, could be the next day, depending on the day of the week. And it's just always a matter of when that particular individual feels up to come into group. You know, last week I had a guy, it was his first day, and he was sitting in my group chairing.
Wow, no kidding.
So it's amazing to really look at how everybody comes in and in different shape. You know, some people, as we know, are pretty beat down, but we make ourselves available facility-wide across all the different respects as quickly as possible.
So we know this, the dean of addiction hit every society, every group. You say that two questions on this. One is, would you say this leans more toward middle-aged men than women? And second part, Has it gotten worse in the past 18 months where we've been dealing with a perpetual crisis, certainly in New Jersey and New York, more than other parts of the country, that they've been out of this, they've been out of the crisis for 6 months. We still seem to hear about it every single day, repetitively on the news. And have you seen it worse in the past year and a half? Because certainly the national statistics show the addiction crisis has worsened in the past 2 years.
So I would say just to really hit on both of those questions, right? So in terms of has it gotten worse in the last 18 months to 2 years, I would say it definitely has. And a part that interests me is, you know, I think a lot of people that just sort of know about the opiate epidemic and just addiction in general, right? They would imagine that most of the folks that come into inpatient treatment are addicted to opiates. But we have almost an equal spread of folks that are addicted to alcohol as well. And I think the pandemic has absolutely contributed to that. A lot more middle-aged folks addicted to alcohol coming through our doors. And just to speak to, you know, kind of men versus women, right? One of the things that I think is important to share on that, and I learned this from an individual who's very trained in many addiction science respects, women often progress in addiction and alcoholism much more rapidly than men do, because of things like their body composition and just general response to the substance. So definitely still lean toward a lot more men than women, but more women than maybe in the past. So,
and you mean regress, like they have a harder time overcoming it than men, or is that what you meant by that? Or
no, so just the progression itself. So the action of alcohol on their brain and body. Or
I get it. Okay. So they could become dependent and addicted a lot quicker.
Yes.
Well, that's an interesting thing, but it really is. I'll tell you, Nick, I could talk to you all day. Unfortunately, we're out of time. I would love to have you back on. And I want to thank you for what you do. And thank you for having the courage to share your personal story. From everything that I've seen, it is absolutely critical that the stigma is gone and that people can talk about these kinds of things. You don't have to hide more in the shadows. You need to be out there in the open and deal with it head on, deal with those demons and get help. So if you or your family members need help, a friend, there's something you've noticed, you call 888-RECOVERY or you go online to recoverycentersofamerica.org. Nick, thank you for joining me. Thank you for what you do. Thanks for all the work you do at RCA.
Thank you so much for having me, Bill, and thanks for everything you do. And be blessed. And thank you, everyone who listened. So.
Thank you.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.